This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, WWE Hall of Famer Bully Ray and I discuss the go-home show from Monday Night Raw ahead of the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and the holy grail of wrestling tapes is finally uncovered. Becky Lynch will look to retain both of her women's championships at Money in the Bank, but is Becky Two Belts what's best for business? Also, Bray Wyatt gives us another glimpse into what he's been working on at the Firefly Funhouse, and it's terrifying. Plus, after 30 years of speculation, we finally were able to see the infamous lost Bret Hart versus Tom McGee match on the WWE Network. But did it live up to the hype? This was a very telling, in my opinion, Monday Night Raw, Bully, because I think you would agree the last couple of weeks were extremely subpar. I mean, a lot of fans have been in an uproar. It's been a hot topic all over the internet and social media about what's wrong with the WWE, what's wrong with Monday Night Raw. I didn't have high expectations going in because it was a tape show. They're overseas, but I thought that was a decent show from the WWE last night.
Did you think it was a decent show because you actually thought it was a decent show? Or was it a decent show because the past couple of weeks have been subpar?
I think it's a combination. I think you have to factor in that the last couple of weeks were poor. Also, I don't think that it was a great show from top to bottom. I thought it was a great final hour. I will definitely say that. But as you know, Bully, in a three-hour show, it's hard to grab people's attention for that long. But from top to bottom, I would say a good effort from the WWE last night.
What was the number one thing that stood out to you from last night?
Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, me too. And I think it stood out to everybody. I mean, Lord knows, it was trending number one on social media. I love the transformation. It's scary. It's creepy. It's all of the above. And he's done a fantastic job with this character. And I love, you know, with a lot of wrestlers portraying characters, whenever they have to switch over from, one emotion to the next, when Bray Wyatt takes that dramatic pause and you can almost see his eyes glass over as if he's transforming back into the maniacal Bray Wyatt, when he looked into the camera, and I don't remember the exact thing, but he's like, you know, you want to know my secret? It was awesome. And then he opens the door and he takes us, you know, I don't know what he is. I mean, he reminded me of the Joker. He reminded me of Venom. I think he's the new lead singer of Slipknot.
Corey Taylor's out?
Yeah, Corey Taylor's out. Bray Wyatt is in. Actually, throw that out on social media just so Corey Taylor can see it because he loves the show.
I think I might do it.
Bray, he did a great job with it. And Tom Savini, who we all know from the world of horror, is the one that designed the mask. Looks great. I'm looking forward to seeing how it translates into the ring.
Well, I'll say this. There's quite a few things that you just threw out there, Bully, that I want to kind of capitalize on and repeat. And first of all was the cuts of Bray Wyatt when he's just staring into the camera. Like, he's not saying a word. He's just kind of staring into the camera. It's damn creepy. I mean, Bray Wyatt, forget about the mask, and I'll get into that in a second. But Bray Wyatt himself has really embraced this side of the character, and I absolutely love it. Second of all, like, I think good job by the WWE in having a segment like this that really hit the mark and is actually creepy. A lot of times they try too hard to be kind of scary, and they just don't know how to do it right. These vignettes have been absolutely fantastic. And then you mentioned the mask and the character of Bray Wyatt. And again, kudos to Tom Savini. I mean, Tom Savini, you know, is a big part of my all-time favorite movie, Dawn of the Dead. But when I look at the Bray Wyatt character, and I've heard, like you just said it, is he kind of like a combination of, you know, the Spider-Man villain, Venom, and all that? I look at this, and I don't think of any other character. I look at this as a standalone character that's really grabbing my attention. got to give a lot of credit to Tom Savini. Got to give a lot of credit to Bray Wyatt. And also, you got to give some credit to the WWE.
I totally agree. And I'm going to compare this now, the reveal, to my theory when it comes to World Heavyweight Championships, the chase versus the carry. We were invested in the chase, meaning the build-up to the Bray Wyatt reveal last night. Every single week, we found ourselves more and more intrigued by the Firefly Funhouse. And Listen, they put it on in the at about 10:30 last night on purpose. They wanted you to stick around Raw just to see when they were going to give this to you. So the build-up to the reveal is basically the chase. Last night, we got the reveal, and now moving forward, we're going to get the carry. Do we think Bray Wyatt can carry this character? Bray without the mask was just as creepy as he is with the mask. I think he's gone from creepy to full-blown scary now. He looks like that evil circus conductor or something like that. You know what he looked like in his gear? He reminded me of one of the characters at a Motley Crue's Carnival of Sins tour, that creepy clown that they have. And if you've never seen it before, go check it out. But it was just he looks like something out of a deranged funhouse. Now, how does that... You know, how does that carry over into the ring? I don't know. I kind of want to see the entire arena look like a creepy funhouse during every one of his segments. I'm going to give you an example, Dave. This is a really odd one. Mm-hmm. Remember how when New Jack used to come to the ring, his music played for the entire match?
Yes.
That was unique. That was different, right? You never heard anybody's music play for the duration of a match. I mean, whether he was out there for 5 seconds or for 5 minutes, New Jack's music was playing in the background, and that made it cool and different. I want to see something similar like that with Bray Wyatt. I want all the lights out, all the lights in the arena to be out, and it to look like a creepy, you know, scary funhouse, or just something different that makes his look and his matches unique.
Yeah, and like we always talked about it, and I was kind of hoping that Bray Wyatt would come back as that, as we mentioned, the Max Cady character from Cape Fear, where he first came on the scene with the Wyatt family on the main roster when he had, you know, the Hawaiian button-down shirt and the straw hat and the white slacks, you know, and then it kind of got kind of goofy and a little too, like, sci-fi for me, and it kind of lost its way. I love the fact that he's embracing a whole new character. Like, he's creepy, bully with, like, a sweater and corduroy pants. Like, you know, it's crazy, and with a button-down shirt underneath the sweater. Like, that's that he's been able to embrace this and make this what it is. I am really intrigued and interested what's next. Like you said, how is this? And I'll ask you the question, Bully. How is this going to translate into the ring? Because that's where the payoff has got to happen. Like you said, the build and the story is with these Firefly Funhouse vignettes. But how do you think it's going to translate once he gets into the actual wrestling ring?
Well, I still think there's an entire level of entertainment they can go with before he ever gets in the ring. I need to see this new creepy clown character showing up in the arenas. Like, I would love for the lights to go out in the locker room. I mean, it could be the women's locker room for all I care. The lights go out, and all of a sudden, you see the creepy mask in the locker room. Like, I want to see him randomly pop up at arenas. I don't want to see just, next week, Bray Wyatt's going to be wrestling, and then we get a new entrance, and he wrestles. I still think there's another level to this character, where he's showing up, and he's legitimately terrorizing the whole locker room. You see the mask in the background. I mean, you can have anybody. You can have Samoa Joe yelling at Rey Mysterio's son. But then in the background, there's that creepy clown mask. You kind of get where I'm going here,
Yeah,
Dave?
Yeah. Little hints and pieces that you're going to have to kind of put together throughout the weeks.
I guess it's kind of like, you remember the movie It?
Yes.
You know how It was always in the background? He was listening, and he was, you know, it's just that creepy background clown where you never know where and when he's going to show up. You give me a couple of weeks of that, and then you give me something in the ring. I don't want them to build up to a next week, Bray Wyatt is going to wrestle. Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, and that's what I was kind of afraid of. And a lot of people think that this is the end of the Firefly Funhouse, and now maybe even at Money in the Bank, he makes an appearance. I hope not. Like, I really hope they're smart with this, and they keep it slow, and they keep building and building. Because you're right. I don't want to make this like, you know, at Money in the Bank, they announce like, oh, yeah, on Monday, Bray Wyatt makes his, you know, in-ring return. Because that could be disastrous. Because once he makes that in-ring return, who is he going to return in the ring with? You know, that's going to be when they finally build to that. That's going to be the final piece in the puzzle. He's going to have to find that perfect opponent to be in the ring with. So I'm in no hurry, Bully, for that to happen.
And with Bray, they can do a lot of things that they used to do with Kane years ago. Like Bray can come up through the ring and pull somebody under, or he can be under the ring and somebody's on the outside and they get pulled under, you know, like that movie Drag Me to Hell. There's so many cool, creepy things you can do with Bray and the entire locker room. It really should be nobody is safe. The entire lot, they should build up to where Raw and SmackDown are on high alert, because you never know where this crazy clown killer is going to, you know, pop up next. So many levels of entertainment left to done with him before we ever see him in a ring. That's just my opinion. And if I was a part of this creative crew, that's what I would suggest.
And you know what, Bully? Like, they're putting time and money into this. Remember how you were saying with the build with Braun Strowman, they were sacrificing garbage trucks and ambulances and building up Braun Strowman to be strong? Then they kind of lost their way after a while. But with Bray Wyatt, I mean, to hire a Tom Savini to do this mask, that means they're really putting a lot of time, effort, and money into it. So if you're going to put that kind of effort into something, see it through. So I really have a little confidence that they're going to probably do the right thing when it comes to Bray Wyatt this time around.
I agree. They are fully investing in this this gimmick, this new character, this change of character, and it speaks worlds to how much confidence the WWE has in Bray Wyatt. As we talked about last time I was on the show, this is not an easy character to pull off. They have to have a lot of confidence in you that you can do this, and he proved himself with the entire, you know, initial Bray character. I think he's going to do really, really well with this. It's just a question of how they're going to build up. Eventually, he has to wrestle. We know that. But if they can hold off on the wrestling, we've seen him in these creepy segments. So we can assume that he filmed this in his Firefly Funhouse.
Yeah.
But when he shows up to the arena, man, I would be able to handle 10 weeks of buildup of where you never know where this guy is going to show up next. And people are disappearing. And, you know, first it's a stagehand. Then it's one of the guys driving the ring truck. And then it's a referee. And people are, you know, like the places. It's like something out of a scary movie where people are just disappearing left and right. We don't know what happened to them. And then maybe one time the lights go on and off in the arena and we see the clown for a split second and then we don't see him. Anything that keeps the build on this crazy maniacal character.
And again, they're giving you a reason to tune into Monday Night Raw every week. I mean, you know, listen, even the last couple weeks when Raw was pretty bad, Bully, let's face it. We still had the Firefly Funhouse, and that's still what we were talking about coming out of the show, and that was definitely a segment that excites us. So that's definitely something that we're going to be looking at over the next couple weeks.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156 or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
Yeah, this contract signings last night on Monday Night Raw with Lacey Evans and Charlotte Flair and Becky. And what did you think of what we saw last night between the three?
I thought the verbiage was good. I thought the physicality was good. I thought the segment was good. When you saw Charlotte and Lacey standing next to each other, I know Charlotte was wearing much more form-fitting clothing and Lacey had on the, you know, the big poofy dress, but could you see what I meant about the stature?
Yes.
That I told you weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
They're just reminiscent in stature and athletic ability. And I think that's good because I think we need another athlete like a Charlotte in the women's division. And I think Lacey can be that. Becky's going to have a long night at Money in the Bank. Depending on how they set this up, she might have to have two really, really strong matches. I'm not sure the direction that they're going to go in, because with her having to defend both championships and the outcomes of each one, plus the winner of the money, the women's Money in the Bank possibly cashing in on the same night, the possibilities are endless. So I'm not even going to try to figure out what they're going to do. I just hope we get some quality matches from Becky, because I think she needs two really great matches with Lacey and Charlotte.
And who knows, at the end of the day, Becky might have three matches on Sunday, because maybe someone might cash in that Money in the Bank briefcase, depending when that match is going to be on the show. And courtesy of WWE.com, you mentioned that segment with all three. Let's listen in with Lacey Evans, Charlotte Flair, and your two belt champion, Becky Lynch.
And let's be honest, honey. You can continue to pretend to swing around something you don't have, because the fact is, there is no way you're going to take out two real ladies such as Charlotte Flair and Lacey Evans.
You want to see me swing something? Come a little closer, I dare you. Come on, I'll give you a free shot. Go ahead. Show her that women's right, Lacey, and break that glass jaw.
I don't want to get this dress dirty, sweetheart.
Yeah, I'll slap the blonde off both of you guys.
Uh-oh. Lacey and Charlotte have heard enough. The man is under fire again.
Becky Lynch not holding back at all. They stepped in first.
And taking the fight to the queen.
Well, after this, we're probably not going to see a 100% Becky Lynch at the beginning of Sunday at Money in the Bank.
We might have two
matches. Two
brand new women's champions in WWE. Look out! Becky Lynch driven straight through the table.
Pretty interesting conversation between the three. Swinging what she doesn't have. Good line by Lacey.
That's good innuendo.
Yeah.
I like that. That's just enough. You know what I liked about the verbiage also? The verbiage wasn't clean. And what I mean by clean is, okay, I'm going to talk, and then you're going to talk. If you notice, they stepped on each other's lines just a little bit. Because that's how real people talk when they're annoyed with each other or mad or they have something to say. You know, it's like Charlotte was like, go ahead, hit him with that women's right. And before she could even finish the sentence, Lacey's like, nah, I'm not going to ruin my dress. And whoever is producing these segments is doing a great job, because it seems more conversational and real between the women. The only thing that I would have done different in the segment is I would have had Lacey show the initiative to put Becky through the table. Lacey needs a little bit more of the rub right now. We know what Charlotte is. Charlotte is, you know, technically Charlotte is the man when it comes, you know, to being in that ring in the WWE. I would have liked Lacey to take the initiative, because I've never seen a woman put somebody through a table in high heels, and that would have been a hell of a visual.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you when it comes to Lacey Evans, because there's a lot of people, just judging from social media last night, Bully, that are a little fearful of the fact that this could be a lopsided victory for Becky Lynch. And when it comes to Charlotte Flair, it does feel a little bit like been there, done that. Listen, I love Charlotte Flair. I mean, you know, I think she's the best when it comes to that division, without a doubt. But it does feel a little bit like we've seen this before. The wild card is Lacey Evans, and I really hope that they give her a strong showing on Sunday.
Why did you just say that you think that that Becky was going to roll over Lacey or roll over Charlotte?
I mean, that's roll over Lacey.
What good would that do?
No, I wouldn't do good at all. I'm just saying that's what I've been reading a lot. A lot of people are fearful that that's a possibility on Sunday. I think it would do good at all.
I got to tell you, man, with I see all of the same potential in Lacey that I saw in Charlotte years ago. Not just me, everybody. She has the athletic ability. I mean, for Christ's sake, she's a Marine. She's physical. She's got athletic ability. She's got great stature. When you have all of those things, plus this character, and listen, Vince McMahon loves a Southern accent, so we have a character with a Southern accent who can actually go in the ring, I think they're going to give her every opportunity to succeed. And I think she deserves to succeed. I'm not sure who I want to see come out of this the champion. I can tell you this. I like Becky chasing belts a lot better than Becky holding belts.
Well, this is why I'm a little concerned about Sunday. And I know what you're going to say. I'm probably reading too much into this. But, you know, I also learned from history as well. And we've seen it before in the WWE. I agree with you on Lacey Evans. Tremendous upside. And I think she really needs to have a very strong showing. But this is the problem that I have going into Sunday. Because it's not just Lacey. She's also going up against Charlotte. So they're still putting a strong emphasis on Charlotte, which I really don't think they need to do right now. Charlotte's Teflon. They could put her anywhere on the card in any kind of story, and she's going to look strong. I don't think she needs to necessarily be in the championship picture right now. That's just my opinion. And then you have the Money in the Bank ladder match. So one of those women is going to be chasing Becky. I just hope Lacey's not the odd woman out of this story coming out of Sunday.
I agree with you. But if Charlotte is not in the world title picture, where is she? You're going to have to find a real personal storyline. Charlotte, much like her father, is synonymous with the world championship. And Charlotte comes off as the kind of woman and character to me where if I'm not the world champion, I'm basically worthless. That's the kind of woman that her ego, and I'm talking character-wise, needs to be the champion at all times. Now, in a perfect world, or in my world, the type of wrestling that I like, I will take real life and have it reflect what's seen in the ring. So since the WWE just decided to tell us that Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins are in a relationship, hopefully they tell us that Charlotte Flair and Andrade are in a relationship. And I'd much rather see Andrade and Charlotte versus Seth and Becky than I would any other match they could possibly give us right now.
I mean, that would be absolutely amazing.
And all four of them doing physicality to one another, because I know that not everybody agrees with me, but I'm for all four intergender wrestling, okay? Women and men can fight under the WWE umbrella because it's been done before and it's worked. And remember, folks, it's entertainment. And I got to tell you, Becky and Seth versus Charlotte and Andrade would be entertaining as balls.
I mean, it's something, again, that would bring out a personal story, because if you're going to have something with some personality and some realism to it, bully, all you have to do is look at real life. You said you always like your wrestling with realism. Well, you can't get any more real than that. And since the WWE did tweet out that picture with Seth and Becky, why not go there? I mean, you know, if they're going to put it out on their social media, that means that they want their fans to know about it. If they want their fans to know about it, why not use it in a story?
It almost seems like this is WWE's version of a Hollywood super relationship, kind of like a Jay-Z and Beyonce, where the two biggest stars that they have are coming together. And I think the WWE has jumped on it just like the media would. Or maybe they're trying to get out in front of the media because they know the media is going to jump on it. In real life, I wish Seth and Becky nothing but great stuff. They're both very nice people. It's going to be very hard to have a relationship in the WWE with the world of social media and everybody analyzing and overanalyzing and triple analyzing everything that's said. But the universe loves Seth. They love Becky. Hopefully they leave them alone personally enough where they can enjoy a personal life. But when it comes to storylines, man, if you were to give me a good interwoven story between Seth and Becky as they're on their own journeys, I'm into that because I know they're a real life couple. So Seth is fighting AJ for the championship at Money in the Bank, right?
Yeah.
And we got We got Becky versus Lacey and Charlotte. Well, if Seth were to lose, I think I want to see Becky console him. And if Becky were to lose, I want to see Seth console her. Why? Because the WWE just shouted at the rooftops to their 10 million followers that these two are a couple. Well, if you want me to know that they're a couple, then I want to see them on an emotional ride together. I want to see their happiness together, and I want to see their sorrow together. Otherwise, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't know why they would tweet that out if they're not going to use it on programming. Because then it takes, then you're sapping the realism out of it. Like, then they are truly saying this is completely separate than what goes on. And that's going to just confuse fans. Because, let's face it, Bully, you know, with you and I, we're using social media as a tool. But for a younger generation, social media is interwoven into everything that they do on a daily basis. So if you're telling a generation of fans that Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch are together, but then they're not together when it comes to what you see on TV, to me, that just kills everything that you see on TV. Because as we said before, and we said this when it came to Charlotte and Becky and Ronda, the feud on social media was 10 times better than the feud that they're actually having on TV. And the fact that they're tweeting this out and sharing it with their fans, man, why not use it? Why not, like, why not on Sunday have Becky, you know, watching at, you know, watching, showing her watch, you know, Seth and AJ, you know, like, even if it's from a monitor in the back. And then they can make the comment that, yeah, you know, Becky's watching her man do her thing, you know, defending that Universal title. Little hints of it, and then maybe you can use it in a much bigger way down the road.
I mean, off the top of my head, and this is not what they're going to do, but this works for me. Becky defends her championship against Charlotte and retains. And then Seth retains his championship against AJ, but he gets hurt really bad in the match, and the medical attendants are back there with him. And we see Becky worried about Seth. Now Becky goes out there, and maybe she loses to Lacey. I'm fine with that, because I'm getting a hint of real life. Hey, Becky was concerned about her man. Maybe her mind wasn't on the match.
Yeah.
You got a problem with that?
Not a problem at all.
It works. Like I said, these are just little ideas. We're just riffing here about how they can take a real-life relationship and make sense of it in the world of entertainment.
Or somewhere down the road, to go to kind of piggyback your point, you know, Seth loses that Universal title, but Becky still retains her titles, and Seth feels like a third wheel. And the fact that, you know, his girlfriend is extremely, you know, accomplished and doing much better professionally than he is. And there's a little bit of a jealousy factor there. I mean, I'm just throwing stuff at the wall, but you get my meaning. That could make for some compelling TV.
Without a doubt. And I think if you ever were to get Andrade involved, where they actually acknowledge Andrade and Charlotte's relationship, because I mean, Andrade and Charlotte have been dating, it seems like, much longer than Seth and Becky, or maybe they're just acknowledging Seth and Becky, but not really Andrade and Charlotte. I don't know. I'm just saying, if the WWE acknowledged one relationship, I would love to see them acknowledge the other relationship, because those four performers, both on TV and on social media, could have people emotionally invested. I'm emotionally invested just sitting here talking about it with you. I would be so into this, especially if the payoff was an intergender match, because I am a big fan of those matches, especially when you have performers who can handle the physicality. And I've been saying from day one, I want to see Charlotte wrestle against some of the better men's wrestlers, because I think that's the only way Charlotte is going to get better. Charlotte is as good
Charlotte
as
Charlotte against Seth Rollins. Are you kidding me?
Take my money.
Yep.
Take my money. Because the only way Charlotte has gotten as good as she can possibly get with the other women athletes there. They have all rubbed each other to the top. Charlotte needs to be in the ring now with better athletes than her. So where do you look? Well, now you have to look to the men. And I'm telling you, man, that intergender match, that four-way, it would be awesome. And the people would be on their feet.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
Bret Hart and Tom McGee from October 7th of 1986, Bully. And finally, it was released, a little mini documentary, and showing the full match that most people thought was either never filmed or destroyed. And it was shown on the network following Monday Night Raw last night. And for a lot of WWF old school fans, that was the quote unquote Holy Grail.
And the reason it was the Holy Grail is because Vince McMahon thought Tom McGee was going to be the next Hulk Hogan, right?
Yep, and I got this strictly from, and this is where I got excited about this match and I wanted to see this match, I guess most people too, was from Bret Hart's book. Bret Hart talked about this match in his book, this match with Tom McGee and a guy who really didn't have any talent at all, but Vince McMahon thought, you know, he was the next Hulk Hogan. As a matter of fact, people said he actually quoted that this is going to be my next champion. This is my next Hulk Hogan. And even watching that match in the monitor in the back, Vince McMahon was in a tizzy saying, this is unbelievable. This guy is fantastic. Little did he know, if he watched the match a little bit closely, it was Bret Hart carrying Tom McGee and really showed how great Bret Hart was, because he actually put on an entertaining, good match with a guy that was probably just a little bit better than a broomstick.
And this is a great example about how the other person you're working with makes you look good and you make the other person look good. Bret Hart made McGee look like a million bucks so well that he had the wool pulled over the eyes of Vince. It was all Bret. And obviously Bret went on to be the superstar. But it is a very, very interesting story about how things go on inside of a wrestling ring and how you get over and how that your opponent can get you over. I mean, you talk about, you know, the old thing about the broomstick. Bret Hart got a broomstick over, and that's no diss to Tom McGee. You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
But Bret was able to pull the wool over everybody's eyes, including the boss. Interesting story. Hope we can get him on one day.
Yeah, and here's the thing, though, with that match. Think about it. So Vince McMahon thought he found his next world champion, but he picked the wrong guy, because it wasn't Tom McGee that would become his future champion. It was Bret Hart. And it was based on that match. Like, think about that. Like, Bret Hart was a tag team wrestler. He was a mid-card guy. And then he becomes a future champion, and a lot of it was based on what he was able to do in that match with Tom McGee. And there's things that are curious, and I got to be honest with the nation and with you, Bully. I didn't watch this network special last night. I went to bed right after Monday Night Raw, and I haven't had the opportunity to watch it. So maybe this stuff is explained in the mini documentary that they have on the network. So I'm just going on the things that I've read and kind of the research that I've done, just being interested in this match as an uber wrestling fan. Now, Bret Hart was told that he had to put Tom McGee over. Wasn't happy about it, because here comes Tom McGee that, you know, has been in wrestling for a cup of coffee, though he was trained by his dad, Stu Hart, which I thought is quite kind of interesting. But he was asked to put Tom McGee over, but One of the things that they told Bret Hart was that this was going to be a match that was just for the crowd in the arena and was never going to be shown on TV. So the thing that was kind of interesting to me, for a match that was never going to be shown on TV, why does it have commentary with Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan, if that's the case?
I think they voiced over everything just in case. I couldn't give you an exact reason why. I popped for Gorilla saying sub-secularis muscles. I don't think Tommy Dreamer has those muscles, by the way.
At this point, never mind. I refrain. No, but you know, and playing that audio, how great was Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon together?
The best.
I mean, they really...
No better.
I think together as a team, like I always say, JR is the best commentator. But as far as a team, I don't think you could get any better than Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon.
Old school humor, jabbing each other, played off each other so well. Gorilla was great at getting the talent over in the ring. I mean, it's what I grew up on, and I really enjoyed it. And now, you know, being in the wrestling business and, you know, and being older and going back to listen to that stuff, it's so entertaining. It's so good just to hear Heenan, a master at what he did.
And you know what? It shows that you can have that dynamic. You can have the heel and face announcers. And you know why it works, Bully? Because Bobby Heenan was actually funny. You know, a lot of times they force wrestlers and commentators to be funny when they don't have that talent to do it. You know, Bobby Heenan, I'm sure most of that, if not all of that, was off the top of his head. None of that was scripted. That's coming off the top of Bobby Heenan's head.
Do you know who was producing Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon when they were doing those shows?
Who's that?
Nobody. Nobody was producing them. Just like what you said, top of their head. Tell me about what you see. Entertain me.
The fact he's like quoting the Janis Joplin song, Bobby McGee, and saying that it's Tommy McGee. And Gorilla saying, well, I wish it was Bobby Heenan. Like, that's just perfect timing. That's knowing the person you're working with. That's working with that person for quite some time, so you know their mannerisms. You know what they're going to say. You know how to follow up. Man, that is such a lost art when it comes to pro wrestling, Bully.
Maybe we should get Tom McGee on the show.
We're gonna try to get Bret Hart. We're gonna try to get Tom McGee on. I think it's fun, and then it's about like the Holy Grail, when it comes to pro wrestling. And man, for 7.5 of the 10 years that we've been on the air, Bully, I was yelling and screaming about the last Battle of Atlanta. I don't know if you know this story or if Alex Metz knows this story, or if a lot of the nation that may be newer fans of this show know this story. But I got duped when it came to the last Battle of Atlanta. There was somebody, this is going back years, there was a fan that reached out to me through this show that said they had an actual copy of the last Battle of Atlanta. And they were saying, hey, I'm a fan of the show. I want to show you this. I have a copy. It's the arena, it's the actual in arena footage, because it wasn't televised, that match. And they said, I have a copy of it. And let me just kind of rewind just a little bit, Bully, for maybe some nation members who don't know the match that I'm talking about. There was a long time feud between Buzz Sawyer and Tommy Rich in Georgia Championship Wrestling. And it was played out in front of a national audience because it was played out on TBS, a superstation. And they had a 2-year feud between those two. The blow-off match, the last ever match between those two. Think about this. To end a 2-year feud, they were going to have a match at the Omni in Atlanta, and it wasn't going to be televised. Think about how frustrating that is as a fan, that the blow-off match, their final match, the only way you could see that match is if you bought a ticket and went to the Omni to see it. So the only things you had to go by were the pictures that you saw in the wrestling magazines. And if anybody wants to Google that match and look at those pictures, I'm talking about an art form. When you're looking at those pictures and just a bloodied Buzz Sawyer and a bloodied Tommy Rich in what a lot of people call the original Hell in a Cell match, because it was a cage that had a roof on it. So you were never able to see that match. So it became like, you're never going to see this match. And then there's little rumors about that they did videotape it in the arena for the in-arena audience, like on the big screens that are throughout the arena. So I had a fan said that they had a VHS copy that he dubbed onto DVD that he was going to let me see. But it was going to be at a price. He wasn't just going to let me see it. It was going to be at a price. And I didn't feel comfortable paying money. Didn't feel comfortable doing that. But at the same time, you know, I wanted to give something to the fan for the effort, because I thought it was justified. And man, at this point, honest to God, I probably would have emptied out my daughter's college fund to be able to see that match, much less own it. So I actually sent this fan a care package of memorabilia that I had, autographed pictures. I sent that just as like, hey, here's a gift to you. Can you send me a copy of that? And I got duped.
No.
Yep, I got completely duped. That guy went, as we call, radio silent. Never heard from him again.
You got swindled?
I got swindled.
You got hornswoggled?
I got hornswoggled.
Wow.
Yep.
That sucks.
And then, like, 2 weeks later, oh, it's on the WWE Network. So I don't know how they got that. There's still a lot of... there's a lot of conflicting reports about how the WWE was able to get that copy of that match. Maybe it was from that fan that reached out to me. Maybe it was from Precious Paul Ellering, who I heard had a copy of it. Or maybe the WWE had a copy of that match all along. I don't know. But to me, that was the ultimate holy grail of pro wrestling, because it was a two-year feud, and you were never able to see the payoff.
I'll tell you what, I bet you Tom McGee's booking fee has gone up overnight.
Well, Tom McGee and Bret Hart are going to do an appearance at StarCast talking about this match and the story going in and what happened to each one of them going out. Think about that. This is almost like a Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf story, if you think about it. You know, Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf were kind of fighting for that number one spot in the 98 draft. Peyton Manning went one, Ryan Leaf went two. And Peyton Manning went on to win multiple Super Bowls and become a Hall of Famer. And Ryan Leaf became somebody who, not long after that, was behind a jail cell behind bars. Bret Hart went on to become one of the most iconic wrestlers of all time. Tom McGee was out of pro wrestling by the year 1990.
Whatever happened to him? Did he just retire? Did nothing ever click for him after that? Do you know?
Well, Alex Metz, I know you've been doing some research as well.
Yeah, this whole thing's fascinating to me. So actually, Dave's right. Tom McGee was out of wrestling. He was out of the WWF by 1990. After the Bret Hart match, he kind of went on to do some different things with them, facing guys like Terry Gibbs, Barry O, Frenchie Martin on the house show
circuit.
That's
the enhancement list.
Yeah, and he remained undefeated through the winter and the spring of 87 with those guys, but the WWF gradually cooled off on Tom McGee. By 1990, he was out of the business, and you hear this in the documentary because guys like Davey Boy Smith Jr., Natty's husband TJ, and some other guys talk about how they would see Tom at the famous Gold's Gym in Venice Beach, California, where he was a trainer. That's where he ended up after this.
It's amazing. I'd love to know what match it was after the Bret Hart match where Vince went, well, maybe I was wrong.
Well, you know what? That's a great point, because after that match, it wasn't like Vince McMahon saw that match and said, wow, Tom McGee's not the guy. It's Bret Hart, man. Bret Hart just carried Tom McGee. It was the exact opposite. He was super excited after that match that Tom McGee's going to be the guy that's going to be there for me when Hulk Hogan's no longer the champion. This is my next champion. Probably what the Ultimate Warrior turned out to be was going to be Tom McGee.
Correct.
You know, so at least in Vince McMahon's eyes. So probably it was those enhancement matches that probably Vince McMahon saw and said, you know what, this guy really just can't do it in the ring. I can't have him be my top guy.
And actually, they talk about this in the documentary, which I hope you guys get a chance to see soon. After that match with Tom McGee, with Bret Hart, he actually had another match with the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, that you can actually see. It wasn't like a lost tape or anything. They say that match even got Vince hyped up on Tom McGee even more, because kind of taking things that he was A, learning from Bret Hart, and B, from the Ted DiBiase, and applying them in the ring. So my question to you guys, do you think if Vince stayed the course with a guy like Tom McGee, we'd be talking a little bit differently about him, or was he always kind of destined to be what he was?
McGee-a-mania?
McGee-a-mania.
Thanks for listening. Catch us weekdays on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation, Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.